okay, we're gonna do something a little bit unusual, which is we're gonna do halacha tes vav, which is very small halacha. Tough and alpha for yidvav, tes vav.
No, I'm out already.
And then that's fine. Don't worry about it. And then we're gonna go back to finish something from halacha yidal, which is really not really related, but it's connected enough that we're gonna do it. Kisu shabarzo. If you have a cover of metal in halacha yidal, it talks about a metal cover on a pot of liquid. Now if you have kisu shabarzo from the siminus al harora. A metal cover that you put on top of a baking pan when you bake something, kishenefes al kira, that bakes on top of the stove, then tzarech libun, so you have to leave into that pan. Meaning, halacha yudalad had said, if you put the cover on a pot, you have to do hagol, so it's considered to be in the kumishin. And now it says, if you have a cover on top of a pan that you bake on, then you have to leave into that cover. So the question, of course, is, why do you do libun? The pan, the cover, is not touching the food. The cover, it's a baking pan. It's not, so in the last halacha, when there's liquids pouring, you know, there's vapors all over the place, hevel hakadeirun is considered like it's all in the liquid. But over here, it's just, there's a loaf of bread on the bottom, or there's a cake on the bottom, and you have a cover on it, why should you have to lead into it? So it's Magen Avraham, it's a kasha, as you can imagine. So Magen Avraham says two answers. First answer is that sometimes the pan, the cover, ends up touching the food. Let's say if the cake gets a little too high or something happens during the baking, it rises up a little bit. Whatever happens, it'll end up touching it, since that happens sometimes. So therefore, you have to leave into it, because there are times that you're baking, that the cover is touching it. I forgot to say, the question is, of course, because leaven, you know, one of the rules of leaven is that it has to be touching the food. If you have an oven, when you have a leaven, it's only when the thing that touches it, not if it's just in the same chamber.
So if you take a hot food, let's say hot food is always just out of the
leaven.
You put it on something, then
it's
leaven?
No, if it's off the fire, then it doesn't.
Right.
Here it's on the fire. Here it's baking. So the Magen Avraham says there are times that the food will, I'm a little exaggerating with it, but there are times that the food will, let's say the challah gets a little too big and it hits the top.
During the baking, it's leaven then, even though it's just the food. Since the food is still on the fire, you know, don't touch the food, it needs leaven.
As opposed to what else could it touch if not for the food?
As opposed to, like the case of normally, have a grill in between the fire and the food.
Oh, right, that's correct. Even if the fire is not in between them, but it's on the other side, that's also, yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he says, so the Magen Avraham says, well, it happens sometimes. So to that, I'm going to pause for a second. The Sharatin says, you know, it only happens sometimes. It only happens sometimes. We're not even sure if it happened at all. He says, and you know the Rashitas that hold, Chametz is Hetera Bala, you don't have to do Libun anytime. So he says, I would logically say that you should be able to get away with Libun Kal. Since it's only, all this is a Chumet, maybe it happened and Hetera Bala, maybe Libun Kal. So he says, the only problem is that the Prima Gatim says, you do have to Libun Gamma. That this Magen Avraham means Libun Gamma. And which is why the Mishnah Berurah says you should do Libun Gamma. So the Mishnah Berurah is saying, even though you would think there's a lot of reasons here to say that you shouldn't have to Libun, because maybe it touched, and even if it touched, it would only be a Chumet anyhow. He says, no, you have to leave him gone. That just...
And
the Sharatin says all of that. He doesn't say the right Tashmish about it. He says, it's Ein Ben Yoyimah, and it maybe didn't touch it, and it's had terrible. He says, I would logically say that you should do leave him cow. He says, but Prim Gadol says, specifically on this Magen Avraham, you have to leave him gone. Okay? So that's why in the Mishnah Berurah says just to leave him gone. Now, the Magen Avraham has a second answer. Okay, the second answer is that when you have the bread baking in the pan, the vapors that come out of that bread, the recha that comes out of that bread is enough to make the cover need libun also. Even though the first answer was that it touches it. The second answer was it doesn't touch it. But the vapors that come out is enough to make it considered to need libun also. Okay, so what he's saying is that just like vapors from a liquid make you need to do hagolah, so two vapors from a solid make you need to do leaven, which is a tremendous chiddush. It's fakir from many, many achronim, including the Ramah himself in Taras Hatzah says not like that. It goes way down, I mean, in all over the place. And this answer of the Magen Avraham, I should say the Mishnah Berurah brings the first answer of the Magen Avraham. He does not bring this answer of the Magen Avraham because it's not halacha. It's not accepted to be like that. And we talked about this before. We heard this at Beferi Shadin later on. In Tav Samach Aleph that says not like that Magen Avraham, but that's not accepted. I'm saying the Mishnah Berurah doesn't bring that answer. He only brings the first answer, which is unless it touches, that's why you have to leave. Okay? That's for halacha tesvav. So I think we're going to now go backwards. In halacha yidal, we can call it tesvav if you'd like. We talked about that there's three levels of vapors that come out of a liquid. We have the halakha you bought was about hevel hakadera. It's such a compacted amount of the vapors are so compacted and it's so in such a small area, it's considered like the kli rishon itself. There's this regular zeh that comes out of a pot that hits something above it. Excuse me, which is considered zeh. It's considered like iru kli rishon. And then there's recha, which is even lower level, that it's just a vapor like coming out of a dry food. That usually we say you don't have to cut ilu hatchila. You shouldn't bake two foods together, but the evidence will be okay, and zeh is okay, all kinds of things that are okay. So there's a shayla that came up. And that's what I'm talking about now, because it came up now. But it's it relates to this thing, and very much connects to you'll see the revash that has to do with this dinner of zeh, which is like this. The shayla was whether, if you have carbon dioxide that you use to put into a seltzer or into soda or something like that, whether for Pesach, whether there should be a problem for whether that stuff whether it has to be kosher. There's such a thing to make it not kosher to Pesach.
We have a Shabbat.
What?
We have one place that's coming there.
We have one place that makes carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the people who make carbon dioxide. I'm talking about the people who use it. I'm talking about
it's
from kidneys.
That's the carbon that stuff you put into the soda, you mean?
I'm talking about the stuff you put into soda.
Remember what Rabbi Jerov said about that.
He said it should be obvious,
because
it's
not
in the
margins. If you would
eat the
comments at Pesach
and you grab
the
Seder, you
know. Wonderful. Okay, so that's a very nice halachic way of looking at things. Okay, so now. So let's see what the shayla is. Okay, I'm going to make three groups of ways that you could make carbon dioxide. Okay. One is when you make a fermentation, when sugar turns into alcohol, a byproduct of that fermentation is carbon dioxide. Okay, the sugar turns into alcohol and carbon dioxide. So like when you make bread or beer or schnapps or ethanol, any of these kinds of things, when you're creating alcohol, a byproduct of turning sugar into alcohol is carbon dioxide.
And that's fermentation.
Of a fermentation. So when you ferment...
Bacteria makes the sugar into alcohol.
The yeast helps the sugar become alcohol, but it breaks down. If you want, you can see the chemical formula. It breaks the sugar into two things: alcohol and carbon dioxide. Okay. It's a byproduct of the.
That's a vapor.
It's a vapor. Yes,
that's the capture.
It's a vapor. Yes, we'll get to how to capture in a second. Yes, that's one thing. That's one. The second thing is when you burn things, okay, when you combust things, it creates carbon dioxide.
So people die.
I don't know if that's why people die, but that's carbon monoxide. Okay, but it's more carbon dioxide is much more famous for anybody who reads papers because of it's supposedly causes global warming, because that carbon dioxide, when you burn coal to make energy, that coal or the back of your car comes out and it's carbon dioxide coming out, and according to those who agree with this, it's creating a layer up in the atmosphere, which is holding the heat in, and blah blah blah, etc. Because that's not for us. Okay, but that's a way to, that's another thing that creates carbon dioxide. And then there's the traditional, like just in a lab that you can create it. Or when you make other reactions, it's a byproduct. In the lab, they can create it. You mix this and this and this together, and it creates carbon dioxide like anything else. Okay, so the last two are of course not negatives. They wouldn't be harmful. Okay? The last two wouldn't be anything. And our focus is going to be on the first one, which is if a guy's making bread, if you go past a bakery and it smells really good, it smells good because when they bake the bread, the carbon dioxide gets out and it has a smell to it. The yeast and the carbon dioxide are escaping and it has a certain smell to it. Okay, so when people catch that stuff, so...
You can smell the carbon dioxide.
Part of what you smell when you walk past a big commercial bakery, why it smells so good, is because you're smelling it again. So
It's
not just the chocolate, right.
Carbon dioxide is odor, has an odor.
I didn't say that. Part of the...
It's a carrier.
I can't say for sure. Part of the... When you bake bread... Okay,
you breathe out carbon dioxide. Plants give out carbon dioxide.
Yeah, so no, it's not. I'm sorry.
We give out carbon dioxide.
The alcohol and carbon dioxide.
People's breath smell, but not all things carbon dioxide.
Okay, I'll take it back. Okay, we'll put that on the side, because we're not again.
Am I smelling a paper or something?
Okay, put on the side.
Okay.
When the plant when they capture carbon dioxide and they use it to make soda, it comes as a gas, and they convert it into a liquid or into a solid. Okay, the solid is what we call dry ice. Okay, it's dry ice is solidified carbon dioxide, or as a liquid. Okay, now the first sources that there are about this are all like in the 1900s or early, right before the 1900s or just after 1900s. When this industry was first starting, okay, you see, because I dealt with some people who work in this industry, and they tell me that when they would explain to me how these things went, then you see that as the industry was starting, that's when there were two
starting
to that. That's when carbonated beverages first started. Well, I should say, I'm sure that things like beer were around from before, but the idea to take the carbon dioxide and stick it into Pepsi, that was starting around that. So in those chulas that talk about it, the first chulas that talk about it, or the one that I saw anyhow, all say that it's awesome. You're not using a pesa.
For example,
the names are not. The names are in my papers upstairs. Uh-huh. Okay, it's a bunch of none of the people there.
How do they call carbon dioxide?
They use a German word for it. I don't remember the word. It's upstairs. Uh-huh. Okay, I'm sorry. That footnote is not in there. It's upstairs. So they all assume that it's usher. If it comes from beer, it's usher. They don't even explain why. Right? It was like so obvious that it's usher.
For pesa.
For pesa.
Right.
They assume that it's usher. They don't feel like they even have to explain why things should be usher. On the other hand, they asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, this question came up about 30 years ago. There was some kind of a problem in Eretz Yisrael for pesa. Some kind of a problem, a different problem. And they said, by the way, what about the carbon dioxide shavuot? There's a different problem of it. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said, no, ridiculous, there's nothing wrong. Don't worry about it, it doesn't make a difference. Completely, not, don't think about it. So, we're going to see if we go through the question, where I wrote over here was, it's
Eilu. Not explaining a reason?
Right. Eilu, the Eilu, Divinal, Kim, Kim, they're both right. Okay, those person were right, and Rav Shlomo Zalman was right. Everybody's right. Okay, it's analogous. So, in order to get this, let's go back to something which is ruined again, Talach Yidala, which is like this. The truth in the Rivash about there. It's a very important truth we talked about last time. Alcohol boils at about 173 degrees, and water boils at about 212 degrees. Okay, so someone came up with an idea that you can distill alcohol out of water. You ferment something, let's say you make wine, in the reverse case you make wine, and it's 13% alcohol. If you heat up that liquid to more than 173, but less than 212, what's going to happen is the alcohol is going to boil out, and the water is going to stay behind. And then if you catch those vapors and you cool them down, you're going to end up with something that has more alcohol than 13%. Instead of 13%, it'll be 40% or 60%, however, as much as you strengthen it, and you'll end up with a mixture that's higher alcohol content, what we call brandy. Okay? That's what, and the Shiloh 3 Rush was, is that stuff awesome? You made brandy out of Stam Yayin, is it awesome or is it not awesome? What's the Shiloh? So he says, should you say, here's the pot of brandy, and then there's in order for the brandy to go from here to being this, I'm sorry, from the wine to become brandy, it goes through, it's invisible, it disappears. It's as if this is like coming from no place. You don't see a connection. This does not connect to this. There's no liquid connection. It's just, there's a pot cooking over here, and over here there's another pot in which all of a sudden it's magically filling up with a liquid that doesn't, it's not the same thing. It doesn't even taste the same. It has a different taste to it. So should we say that it has no connection to that thing? There's this invisible vapor that we know is going on.
The same taste.
It has a similar taste, right? But the truth is that in the Shiloh, we'll see in a second, he says it has no taste. Okay, I don't think he means it so seriously. But so he says it goes from here to here, and there's no connection. Or do you say, come on, everyone can see that this thing is becoming this. It's put into you know, a system, so it should become us. That was the Shiloh of the Rivash. And the Rivash, which is written, if I got my dates correctly.
Is this a question?
Yes.
What's the challenge of the question? I mean normally, we know Zeya, like the water. What is it, right? The Zeya goes up and it's like a condensed. Nobody would say that if you see Zeya coming from a pot and the droplets form and it came from nowhere, so why is it that it's different? Is that you don't see Zeya?
The answer is, the only reason you know that Zeya that condenses us is because of this truth in the Rivash. The din in Shulchan Aruch comes from this. The din in Shulchan Aruch is from this din in Rivash. And a Rosh, who has the same Shaila, who the Rosh is the truth in the regular part of your day, in you know, the Basa B'chol part, and the Rivash is in Hilchos Stam Yayin. That's where it comes from. That's where it comes from, that you know it is from a truth in the Rosh and the Rivash. We're doing the Rivash is truth today, but the Rosh and the Rivash is the same kind of a truth. That's where it comes from. Okay, so the Rivash says, that's why I'm telling you why it's such an important truth. That's where the din comes from. So the Rivash said that yes, it's awesome. He says yes, it's awesome, and he brings one of his main writings from Mishnayos in Machshirin, okay. And the Mishnayos they say that if you have a bathhouse, and there's condensation on the walls, if you have a bathhouse with condensation on the walls, that liquid that's there has the din of the water in the bathhouse, because Gavi, whether it could be machshir for tumah, whether it is tumah, a bunch of different cases like that. And so he says, so you see that the vapors that are there, that are collecting, they're not coming from the, you know, they don't squirting it from the bathhouse up to there. Just the bathhouse is hot, and the walls and the windows are all full of liquid. That liquid is considered to have the din of what's inside of it. So you see that there's a connection from the bath to the water that's over there, even though there's like this empty in between it. That's what he says. But the Mishnah said, if you have a cave, and in the cave there's condensation on the walls, that comes from coldness. That's not considered to have a connection to anything. It's just modified as if it's brand new water. That water does not have. We don't say that water is from someplace else. It's like brand new. So if you would just look at the truth just like that, you would say the reverse is maybe being mahalik between hot and cold. A cold condensation on the walls maybe doesn't count, and hot does count. If that would be true, if that's what it would depend on, hot and cold, then in our case it would be mutter. Because in our case, the vapors that come off, the carbon dioxide that comes off at ambient temperature. The fermentation happens at an ambient temperature, and those vapors that come off are coming off at an ambient temperature. So you would say, it's coming off cold. So if you read the reverse just plain, just say, who? It's just between cold and hot. You would say, in our case, it's cold. In cases of cold, it doesn't count. And in cases of only by hot, doesn't count. Like by distillation, then it counts. But by cold, it doesn't count. That's what you would, if you just read it straight. But the truth is, when you look better at the reverse, what he says, what it seems to me, he's saying is like this. When you have distillation, then there's a constant and steady flow of liquid from here to here. As this pot is getting lower, this pot is getting higher. It's a clear connection between them. There's a clear and steady connection from this pot to this pot. So you say, the fact that there's this in-between, you know, invisible in-between, but it's obvious that this is going to this, and therefore it's usher. Okay, that's what it looks to me like in the reverse. In which case, in our case, the same thing happens. It's a cold thing, but the more you make beer, the more you get a collection of vapors on the other side called liquid carbon dioxide. So you do see a connection, and it would be us. That's how it would seem. Now, this thing in this reverse also has another din in Shulchan Aruch that talks about it in a different context, which is like this. The din is, this is a gemara in Avodah Zarah. If you have a barrel of wine, and on top of the barrel, you put a loaf of bread. So the Gemara has a bunch of different cases. It depends if the bread is hot or cold. It depends if the bread is wheat bread or barley bread. If the barrel is open or closed. A whole bunch of different cases. And in some cases, the bread becomes usher. And in some cases, the bread becomes mutter. Okay, the details is not important to us. But the Gemara has a bunch of cases. And in some cases, the bread is mutter. In some cases, the bread is usher. Now, in that case, the barrel of wine is cold. It's cold. Just the barrel is just ambient temperature. So how does the time get from the barrel of wine into the bread that's sitting on the top? Okay? If you think the reverse means just hot and cold, here it's cold. How does the vapors get in there? And the answer is, because it doesn't have to be hot. The point is, if you see a strong connection between the barrel and the bread, meaning because the bread has a time of the wine in it, then the bread becomes hot. It's what? But I'm saying, even though we would usually say recha is lab nosahi, in cases where there's a strong recha, Recha, we had said last time, Recha's lav nosi is only because Recha is usually of such a small amount that the amount is bottled into the other food. But if the Recha is strong enough, that's what, if you get the right case, if the bread is the right kind and the barrel, all those trust and fight, it's going to be nice and time into the bread, and the bread's going to become usher. So there it's happening in cold, everything's cold over there. The reason it's happening is because if there's enough of a connection, then you do say it's asers. It doesn't be dafka hot to asr. If there's enough of a connection, the time from here is going into the time over there, then it's going to ask the food. Okay, so now I have a question. There's two ways to understand what the Rivash is saying now. At the beginning of the Tshuva, the Rivash says, in the Shaila, and in the beginning also, he describes the brandy as being holach, taimoi, rechoi, umamoshai. Okay? That this new stuff has nothing to do with the original one. It has no flavor connection to it. Holach, taimoi, rechoi, umamoshai. Okay, the two things like have nothing to do. That's how we described it in the question and in the beginning, as if they have no connection to each other. In which case, you would say that what makes it, so why is it awesome? Why does he pass it as awesome? It's awesome because there's such a constant, steady flow from one to the other that this one becomes, it's obvious that this is coming from here and it becomes usher. It's not because it has any time to it. Why in the case of the bread on top of the barrel is it usher? Also for the same thing. It's just the fact that it's time, the time is not what's important, but the time tells us that there's a lot of vapor transferring from one to the other. But that's one way to see the Rivash. The other way is that at the end of the tshuva, or towards the end of the tshuva, the Rivash says, his words are, "V'gam tam hayayin v'reichay nishra boi k'tzas," that the brandy that you create has a certain amount of taste of the original wine, which anybody who drinks brandy would tell you that also, that has a certain amount of taste from the wine. It's not nothing. It has a taste from the wine. In which case, a kenzain needs to have a tam in order, the only reason why the stuff on the other end, the brandy is usher, is because, not just because it's a continuous stream, but because the brandy that's on the other side has a taste of the original stuff.
Within brandy, you have some of the original wine in there also?
Yes. Yes, see, the way it works
is... just going to get the alcohol out of that.
No, see, when you make a distillation, even though it sounded like it's going to be perfect, it's not perfect at all. When you boil, let's say, raise up the wine to 180 degrees. Well, it doesn't happen that all the alcohol boils out and all the water stays still. If that would happen, schnapps would be 100% alcohol. It's not, it's only 40% alcohol. The reason is because together with the alcohol that's boiling out, also boils out some water. It evaporates, some water boils over, and some flavor carries over. Lots of things carry over. Yeah, and
they don't just take wine and put in some wine, you know.
Again?
It, the only wine part that's present in the brandy is because it came over with the distillation process. Not that they have wine, I don't know, they put in wine.
No. It's what carries over. No, all that goes in is what carries over.
But
what boils out is, well, the alcohol boils out because you're over 173. Well, much of the alcohol. Some of the water is already evaporating. It's also starting to transfer. And the tam, usually the flavor components, boil at the lowest temperature. They're also passing over. So there's lots of things passing over to the other side, and then you usually have to distill something more than once to get it to the 40, 50, 60% you want. The first time you get it, you'll get it to 20, 30%. Then you do it again to 40, 50, you get it to the amount that you like it to. And then you boil it, the distillation happens more than once, even to get it there. It's not as perfect as you would imagine. They say, oh, I put it to 180 degrees, all the alcohol goes, all the water stays gone. It doesn't work like that. It's not as exact as that.
Okay,
so the brandy does have time of the original thing, and that's part of its feature, that it has a certain amount of that wine taste to it, but it's more alcoholic, so it has a different, you know, it has whatever you're looking for. So, which would sound like that it is important to have time in the other food, which would be the way we would usually think. Usually, in order to say this is the issue from here transfers over here, you would think that you have to have time transferring over. And it would go well with the Gemara that says by the bread, that the bread is only also if it tastes, it has the time of the wine in it. Okay? So now I'm going to pause this for a second now and go back to the carbon dioxide. The people in the industry said something like this. About 100 years ago, they figured out how to collect these vapors and to condense them into a liquid or into a solid. Okay? That's what they figured out about 100 years ago. They said to me, the ways of purifying that stuff weren't invented to the 1950s, 1960s. And they were convinced that in 1900, when somebody would make carbon dioxide, there would be plenty of carryover of taste. If you think about it, the guy's making schnapps, and the vapors are pouring out of his building, okay? And someone's capturing those vapors and condensing the liquid into the vapors into liquid carbon dioxide. And then they assumed that there would be a fair amount of carryover of taste also in those vapors. So when you came to people 100 years ago and said to them, should this carbon dioxide have the din of hummus? It came from a beer, in their cases it came from beer, should we treat it like hummus or should we not treat it like hummus? So they said, you're making a pot of beer, vapors are going down and collecting in a pot someplace else as a liquid carbon dioxide, and that liquid carbon dioxide, you can't taste it, it'll freeze your mouth, but that stuff is known to have a certain carryover of taste from it, so it's, of course it's usher. They don't have to explain to you why it's usher. It's like all the cases we just talked about. It's like making brandy out of schnapps.
It's not boiling. It's not a process of boiling.
So I don't think that according to the Rivash, the crucial.
No, I don't mean that. I mean the taste would carry over even though it wasn't
through
the boiling. It's something else.
It's just
boiling.
Just like the case of the bread sitting on top of a barrel. Time can transfer even though there was no heat. Because if the situation is set up just so, I can.
It's not vapors emitting. It's a fermentation process with the bacteria. You know, it's
yeah.
A whole
and vapors are coming. Vapors are coming out. Vapors are rising out of the thing, and they're carrying with them not just the carbon dioxide. Other things are traveling also. Just like when you have a barrel of wine, there's not even any fermentation going on. So what's rising up? Just coming out. And if the Gemara says, if you make it just so, the barrel sealed and the bread is this kind of bread, whatever it is, if you set it up just so, enough will carry over to be nice and time into the bread. The Machlokes is the what you have to do, but something you have to do. So over here also, there's going to be a carryover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was then. So by then, it was partial that the thing should be usher. Okay, it was just, why shouldn't this stuff be usher? But then came the 1950s and 1960s. Now they told me there are four ways that they purify the carbon dioxide to get rid of all that carryover. Okay, three of the methods that they use are while it's still a vapor, before it turns into a liquid, and the fourth is after it's liquefied, that's the fourth one is done then. So think about it like this now. Now you have, by the time it's a liquid, it's already been purified three times, and after it's a liquid, it gets purified again. So that means, in our days, when you walk into a place that makes carbon dioxide, if you were to taste that stuff, it has no taste. It has no anything from the original thing is gone. So, why the person said 100 years ago to us, that's easier to understand. But nowadays, so now it's going to depend how you understood what the important part of the Rivash was. Of course, if you think that the Rivash just meant that there has to just be a steady connection from the Isser to the new pot of stuff that's collecting over here, as long as you see just a steady connection, you see going from here, and all of a sudden, this pot is filling up, then you'll say, even though there's no seeing this time, you'll say, if you understood the Rivash like that, then as long as there's a steady connection without any, even without seeing this time, then you would answer it. So then in our case also, that's what's going on. We have a steady connection. The guys are, making beer, and over there, there's a bottle of liquid carbon dioxide that's filling up over here. So then you would say that it would be usher. But if you say, which it seems, or some time would be saying, which is, that in order to make it usher, not only does it have to be a steady connection, but it's got to have a time to it also. Like the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah about the bread, it's got to have a time to it. Or like the Rivash himself says, that the brandy has a time of the original thing that it came from, which is where we usually work with Isser, is that for the Isser to transfer from here to here, it has to be Nesina's time. Then you say, just because there's a steady connection, but there's no time to this thing, this carbon dioxide doesn't taste anything like the thing that it came from originally. So in that case, then you would say, then it's not us. The fact that it's just a connection, there's an observable connection, that this is making, and all of a sudden this pot is filling up more and more, would not be enough to ask for something like that. Okay, that's how I would see what they're saying. Why they asked it 100 years ago, that's easy for me to understand. Why would be nowadays, what the deal will be nowadays, would depend on how you understand what's the crucial part of what the Rivash is trying to say. Okay, that's all I'm saying. So now I'm going to stop completely and go to just a side point, which is ask some other people what they do. Okay, and I'll give you a drop of the materials in a second. And the people who are asked, the OU and the Ada and the Hesachus Rabbanim, all say that they don't allow people to use carbon dioxide to Pesach if it came from Chametz or from Kidneys. They all say they wouldn't, Chametz or Kidneys, they wouldn't use, with varying degrees of how seriously they take that. Okay? The OU asked the company for a letter, saying, give us a letter that didn't come from Chametz Kidneys. And the Hesachus.
Where did I get it from?
I told you can get it from
sugar?
Combustion.
Awesome.
You can get. We'll get to that in a second. All this practical side. You can get it from lots of other. There are other fermentations that you can get it from that would not be. Or you can get it from artificial.
You can get it from wine.
What?
You can get it from wine too.
Well, it has to be kosher wine then.
So year round you need that.
Okay. Hold it. You thought for a second. Just hold that for 1 second. And the Ada. And the doctor said they have research into their suppliers and they know where they get it from. They didn't explain to me how they do that. Is it a letter? They said, and the Ada, from what I've heard from the Ada, is that they're very knocked on it. Again, I don't know how much they probe, but from the way they described to me how much they do about it, it sounded like they took it very seriously. Okay, on the opposite extreme. Now, none of those three people that I spoke to were able to tell me, or that I indirectly spoke to, were able to tell me whether their Rava Machshir, their Bezdin, their Paisik had made a formal decision that you need that. None of them were able to say that. They all said they do it. But they couldn't tell me whether it was a formal, official psak that you needed. Is it a chumrah? Should the people who run Hashkacha on their own just decide to do it? It wasn't clear to me whether, how they came to that decision of what they do, that wasn't clear to me from any of those places.
Anybody say chumrah? No, kidneys, yes?
The opposite extreme. I've been working on this for a while.
Uh-huh.
It was negated to one of our companies. We'll tell you about that later. Okay. The opposite extreme, Rabbi Heinemann said that there was a time that he was makbar on it, but he, as we, he, he reconsidered, and he can't see anything wrong with this thing at all, and he doesn't care if it's chametz, kidney, he doesn't care anything. I said, do you mind if we say that over here? He said, no problem, everything's fine. You can't be anything wrong with this stuff. It's just a recha, and just a ear, and ear can't be us. And then the middle is the CRC, who for the past couple of years has had the following policy, which was, we would not let a company send us from chametz, but from kidneys we would take it. We take it from kidneys. And within that, all we did was we asked the company for a letter. We also did this letter kind of a thing. And the way I understand it, I did not finish speaking to Rabbi Schwartz about it, but a little bit of my speaking from so far is that it might be mutter and din altogether. Chumah de Pesach, people don't want to have chametz. They want to sit at the Seder and drink seltzer made out of chametz. So therefore, we have to do something about it. I can't say that's 100% what he said, but that's the we were holding it. This
that's what I should say.
Okay, now.
So you think we should be certifying our common actor company for Pesach then?
Well, I don't think it's certified for Pesach. They make it from alcohol, from ethanol, from corn.
Okay.
So we would let. Okay, whether we certify or not, maybe that's another step. Now it happens to be like this. The guys in the industry said something like this.
Oh yeah,
there are many more people. There are many more people making. No. Making carbon dioxide, many more people making carbon dioxide than needed. Okay, in other words, every bakery and beer manufacturer and schnapps, everybody. There are lots of people who are creating carbon dioxide more than theoretically would be needed to fill up all the soda bottles and stuff like that. So what goes on is that the way the industry works is that it's the people who want it who collect it. It's not that the guy who makes alcohol, who makes schnapps, who says, I'm going to collect my carbon dioxide and sell it to somebody. It's not worth it for him. Somebody who wants to buy carbon dioxide, like our company, who wants to sell carbon dioxide, goes and says, could you do me a favor? Can I collect your vapors and turn them into carbon dioxide? They're the people who go after this. That's negated to us as follows. It means is that the fact that in the past few years, a zillion ethanol plants have opened up, doesn't mean that there's now lots of ethanol carbon dioxide coming to people. The people who are buying the carbon dioxide may be set up with the people who they buy it from. It's not like whoever makes carbon dioxide is whoever has a plant that produces vapors of carbon dioxide is collecting it and trying to sell it. It's not like people who make milk, who make cheese, that they will have way, they're trying to sell their way.
Well, I would imagine that the company, whoever allows them to do it, charges them for it.
I'm not talking about what they charge them at.
I mean, mainly when it's not, there's a bigger market. You know, this guy also want to make an extra buck.
The way they said it is, it's not set up at this time. It's not that when I build an ethanol plant, I make a carbon dioxide collection, that's a part of building the plant, and then try to sell it to somebody.
Of course, I understand that.
If somebody will come to me and say, can I buy your carbon dioxide? Can I set up this collection?
Every company tries to make another buck.
Yes, I'm sure they charge them for it. But
I think they're not experts at it. I think our company just attached themselves to a corn facility.
Right.
And probably went over to them and said, we're going to build this. And they made a contract where you don't have to pay a lot for it, probably.
I understand, but my point is that the fact that 10 new ethanol plants open up today doesn't mean that all of a sudden the business is going to lean more in their direction. The people who have been buying it will keep on buying it from where they will. It's not. It will eventually spread to them, but it's not automatic that now there's more of it around to buy from. Okay. Now, one more thing is that what's changed since the olden days is that the early Jews all talk about buying from beer. That's what people talk about. So I say they get it from beer. And my understanding from the beer companies is that beer companies all collect their carbon dioxide, and none of them sell it to anybody else, because what they do is they collect it themselves and reinject it into their product. Okay, so the beer companies, I don't know what they used to do 100 years ago, but their business now is they're collecting the carbon dioxide, they're all doing that, but not to sell somebody else. They want to reinject it into their product. Somehow it's good for the processing to take it out in the beginning and later to reinject it. It's naturally forming. It's like champagne. You know, when you make champagne, the bubbles naturally are there. So instead of letting it fade, they're taking it out and then reinjecting it. They don't sell it to anybody else. So the shiloh for us more is not the beer companies, it's more the schnapps companies. That's more the shiloh now. It could be they're buying extra also. That could be. But there, in other words, beer, which is of all these things, for us, the most serious common shiloh we have is the beer. I don't think that anybody buys it from bread companies. I can't say that for sure. But beer companies are not selling their carbon dioxide to other people. That's not what's going on here. What was going on 100 years ago?
I imagine they were only doing it in places large quantities. Only build some, equipment to process carbon dioxide. If it places large quantities of carbon dioxide.
Okay.
Which probably wouldn't be baking bread or a whole corn processing facility to make ethanol.
Bread. People who bake bread produce lots of carbon dioxide. I don't think it's collected. We'll talk about that. Okay. But I don't think that it's because it's going through the same reaction. The same
every bread you bake, this corn, you're processing tons of corn.
Natural oven. How much bread did you bake? All day baking bread.
It doesn't come near the tonnage of corn.
So I'm saying is that the hummus potentially comes from schnapps. Schnapps, Baruch Hashem, in America is more corny than it is hummusy. We're more likely to have that. You mean that more kidneys? But anyway, okay, that's resolved.